This is a prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. The basic two categories of the topic of this prayer treatment is the same that every prayer treatment should be based on. Very simply, reality versus unreality. The specific topic for this prayer treatment is 1-7, meaning that all seven synonymous terms for God are expected to be included, and the spiritual is intended for us to consider all thought, speech, and action, and what are we doing with it? Are we keeping it on the track of spirit, or are we succumbing to a temptation in this particular title, which is individual, personal ego, and the survival emotion, which comes into play whenever there is fear. Bruce Lee is probably considered by far the most advanced martial arts expert of all time. In fact, the evidence is now coming out that he was murdered at a very young age, I believe it was around 32, because he was so far ahead of everyone else that the competition did not want him to exist. And in this case, the competition was the corrupt ones who were betting on who would be the winner. The ones who own the house in any kind of gambling understand the rule of compound. All you do is take a little bit from a lot of people and you're the winner. Because the lot of people are always operating on emotion and letting ego control them. So if they win big, they will stay in the game and destroy everything that they've received, and then even go in the hole, because they will not recognize that the ego is controlling them, which makes them blind, deaf, and dumb. In other words, blocking out three of the most important senses of the five, which makes them totally subject to being controlled as opposed to being in control. I shall read a series of key points that give the details on exactly how evil operates in this kind of a scenario. Mary Baker Eddy thought science and health was very complete, and she was ready to produce version number one, which ended up being number one of 432 editions. She was convinced that everything in that textbook came directly from God. If we are in deep study, contemplation, really yearning for the truth to be uncovered before our very senses, if we are listening intently and receive angel messages, are these complete? Contemplate that. Contemplate it for just a few short moments. I might add at this point that a moment is defined in two ways. One is that it's the shortest amount of time, and the other is that it is the time involved for a particular segment of an event. Either way, it cannot be divided, so it's not a mathematical term. It's like infinity. It can't be amplified. There's a symbol in mathematics, which is like an 8 lying on its side, which is utilized to indicate that something continues to infinity, which means that it is never resolved, with absolute numbers. Here is a major clue in order to be able to answer what could be considered as a dilemma. And the clue is the definition of God as provided by Mary Baker Eddy in three places. In chapter 14, which is recapitulation, which is the summary of chapters 1 to 13, and it's the very first of 24 questions and answers, which is the format for the entire chapter. A second location is in the glossary, chapter 17, on page 587. And also on that same page is the definition of good, which includes God as being the very first definition. So there's three places where she really tells us what is God all about. So the first one, which is page 465, states that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Now the first four words are basically adjectives that explain the characteristic of each of the seven synonymous terms. So the term incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite really represent that God is not a body. God is divine, which is perfect. God is supreme, which means there is nothing that even comes close. And from a spiritual viewpoint, there is nothing else. And infinite, as you might imagine, it has no limits in any direction whatsoever. So those four terms apply to all seven of the synonymous terms for God, of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Another word that she uses commonly is omni, omni-mind, omni-spirit, omni-soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Omni really means one, only, and all. So the only, the one, and all mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love are that which is God. On 587, she emphasizes a few different words, and she says God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. So everything except those seven terms for God, which by the way are in a slightly different order than it is in chapter 14, everything except those seven terms are just an elaboration of what is inside of those seven terms. On the same page, she defines the word God with an extra O in it, G-O-O-D, good. And it is defined as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omni-action. Think about these three definitions. What is left out? Could God be anything else, or is everything already covered? The seven synonymous terms, as one studies those, will find that they are very complete. And they're all sourced in the Bible. And certainly, the particular words that she emphasizes in all three of these definitions all come from within those seven terms. So there's nothing left out. That defines God. But we're not talking about just God. We're talking about our individual experience every day. And what does that unfortunately include that is not a part of God? Habakkuk tells us that God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. And also, the Bible tells us that there is nothing new under the sun, which means that truth has always been in existence, and that the truth about all existence is that there's no evil in it. Habakkuk tells us that God is of purer eyes than to behold evil, so God certainly couldn't be evil. God doesn't even know that evil exists, because it's the opposite of reality. God is reality, and that includes God's manifestation, which is everything in existence that is real. So only if we're going to think about the unreality, which is the opposite, which is nothing unless we give it a body, a thought, speech, or action, it is nothing. It has absolutely no power if we really understand that it has no source. If we really understand that God is all, and if it doesn't come from God, it is only a misunderstanding. It is not reality. Einstein tells us that science without religion is lame, and that religion without science is a lot worse than being lame. It's totally blind. Einstein's friend, his last name is Underwood, he was one of the top physicists of the day. He was assigned to be on the Atomic Energy Commission in the 1940s when the U.S. decided they wanted to develop an atom bomb to see if they could destroy, on a selective basis, civilization. And in this case, they wanted to destroy a chunk of the people in Japan. Now, God had a very strong message in anything that involves not being godlike, because being godlike is the only thing that has any power. God doesn't know anything about its opposite. If it did, it would have to be the opposite. We can't know anything about anything unless we have it in consciousness, then we are a part of it. So the whole idea in prayer treatments is to work toward cleaning out consciousness so there is nothing in it that is unlike God, and reinforce everything that it is and add additional things on a continuous basis that we're learning in our deep study and contemplation. So what is left out of the definition of God that we need to know about? And why do we need to know about it? Well, what is left out is anything that is unlike God. And why do we need to know about it? Because we are faced with it on a daily basis. Mary Baker Eddy says we're constantly barraged with the universal beliefs of evil, devil. I like to think of devil as being evil, where you assign it to a body, a thought, a speech, or an action. So it's something a little more than what evil is by itself, because evil by itself is non-existent, and it only becomes present to anyone who gives it a thought, speech, or action, and then they make it the devil. But the devil is nothing without the D. And this very moment, this idea came to the surface, that we could indicate that D represents dimension, measurement. It could be a measurement of anything, thought, speech, or action. Something in consciousness, we're giving it a dimension. We're giving it an opportunity to get its foot in the door of our house and think of our house as being our consciousness. Think of our body as being our consciousness. Everything we think, say, and do, that's our body. Everything we do, everything we think, and everything we say is a projection of what is in consciousness. Just like a motive projects itself to become an action or a thought or a speech. In a court of law, if it's an honest judge, he tries to figure out what is the motive here. And if they don't find that there could be any motive, then they can't prosecute whoever has been accused of being guilty. What are we going to prosecute? Are we going to condemn an individual? Or are we going to be an entire new dimension above that and realize that we don't have any authority to condemn? God doesn't condemn. Are we more powerful than God? Is God dumb because he doesn't know about evil? Or is he the most intelligent existence? Because evil is not a single iota of what God is. Isness is an active current tense. What is the individual that we are assigning evil to? Are they really an individual that includes evil? Or is our false thought about the individual attaching the evil to that person? Who did Jesus attach evil to? What person did he name and he says that person is evil? Nary a one. His whole healing was based on the fact that he knew the only real son or daughter of God was a reflection of God. And that enabled him to heal an individual that was falsely viewed by everyone else. Not by Jesus. Jesus didn't falsely view anyone. He recognized evil by destroying evil, not by destroying a person. When he overthrew the tables of the money changers at the temple, does it say anything about that he had a fight with the people that had the tables? No. He took away their tool. That's exactly what the President of the United States has been doing for the last 10 years. He has been taking away the tools of corruption. And of course, the wealthiest man in the world, which partnered with the President, you all know his name, he took his expert programmers in there and established, with the president's full support, a department called DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. And the president has recently referred to it as the Demolition Office, because the Demolition Office is destroying the facility that enables the corruption to be continuing. If you take away the tools, the mechanic can't work. But we don't want to focus on the mechanic. We want to focus on destroying the tools. Mary Baker Eddy has stated very clearly that she is not the author of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, but she was only a scribe under orders of God. Now that's almost totally true. What is not true is anything in the textbook that talks about evil. And if that wasn't in there, then there would be no way that you, I, or any other human could relate to it, because we're dealing with evil all the time. And if all it did was talk about the good, we wouldn't have that stepping stone, that bridge that helps us get from where we are now to something in a more pure dimension. So there must be a consideration that there is a problem that we have to eradicate. If any of you have studied Bruce Lee, as have I, you will find that there is a wealth of information about the strategy and tactics of how to be dimensions above anyone else in whatever field of endeavor you would like to pursue. He figured it out. He knew that evil comes forth with extreme display of mass and power, strength, activity, momentum. But like a clock that has a pendulum that swings back and forth, just before it reverses direction, it has no more energy. It has all been expended. And that's the time that we want to strike at evil. Not person, evil. We let it totally exhaust itself. And then it takes only a tiny touch to reverse it. And then it builds up the strength. And then instead of trying to destroy, it runs out of energy. And it gets to the other end of exhaustion. And then only a touch is needed to reverse it. That's exactly how Bruce Lee, who is considered by far dimensions above everyone else in martial arts, how he was not able to be defeated by anyone. I watched a video yesterday about where there was an 800-pound individual. I mean, this guy was a picture of like a Mack truck. And a picture next to Bruce Lee, who was only 5'6". This guy was only 6'4", but they amplified the pictures to make him look like he was about 10 feet tall. Where Bruce Lee could only look at his belly button. But he really could, he was really higher than that. He could look at his chest. But the bottom line is, the 800-pound giant had never been defeated. He exercised all the time. He had this build of muscles that was just unbelievable if it were measured in dimensions of mathematics. But he couldn't touch Bruce Lee. Joe Louis, considered one of the greatest boxers of all time, watched Bruce Lee practice. And this has all been 100 years ago. And after watching him practice, he said these few words: "You don't fight. You disappear." Very intelligent. He observed him for a few minutes and figured out exactly what he was doing. He was practicing disappearing so he would not be there when the object that the opponent was throwing at him, which normally would be a fist, he wouldn't be there. So the opponent would exhaust himself because he would be punching air. And he was barely able to stand up when he was at the end of the extension of his arm because he put all of his weight into the punch. And there was nothing there. So all Bruce Lee had to touch him to redirect his arm just a little bit to throw him totally off balance, and then he would go down to the floor. And to get 800 pounds up off of the floor was an effort that even the individual had a difficult time doing. He didn't want to fight anymore because he was exhausted fighting himself. It's like trying to yell at the wind or at the mountain. The wind just keeps coming. The mountain just stays there. There's no impact on either one of them. The only thing that has an impact is the one that is wasting their effort. Several of the top stars that were in fighting movies that were known to be really tough people came to train with Bruce Lee. They might be 6 foot two or three, 200 pounds. Bruce Lee was 135 pounds, 5 foot six. But they came to train with him because he used intelligence, not physicality, to defeat the opponent. And his whole idea of having a fight with someone is to eliminate the conflict. Eliminate it. If the U.S. is ever in a war, and they're in them all the time, they shouldn't be. Mary Baker Eddy says we should abide by the Monroe Doctrine. The President of the United States is the only one that has ever mentioned those words since James Monroe himself coined them and brought forth the Monroe Doctrine. And basically it says that if someone is not attacking the American continent, and that goes all the way from the North Pole down to the southern tip of Brazil, if someone is not attacking the American continent in any four of the directions, north, south, east, or west, then we should not be involved in a war with them. We should only be defending the continent that we're on, and we should be assisting any country that is a part of our continent to preserve America, the Americas. Now, the United States is the only part of it that was really discovered and supposedly brought forth with a constitution that was based on individual sovereignty and freedom. But unfortunately, America and its presidents have been tricked time after time, not realizing that the UK never gave up control of the United States, and that they started the Civil War to destroy the United States. Because the favorite tactic of evil is to divide and conquer. Because you cannot conquer unity, so you have to divide it up. If you've ever gone to one of these sandwich places that make really delicious sandwiches, and they make, the ones I've visited make huge ones. I mean, you can't get your mouth around it. So you have to cut it up. If you're going to be having a Thanksgiving dinner and overeat, which is the normal method, you can't take it all at one time. You have to take it a bite at a time. Isaiah tells us, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. Mary Baker Eddy quotes that, and she says, don't expect to get from where you are to the infinite in a step. In fact, you can never get to the infinite. All you can do is strive in that direction. In the meantime, one by one, we overcome different forms of, quote, evil. Because evil is not real, but it appears to be real. And so we get involved. we give it a dimension, and we turn it from evil to devil. And then we name a person. That's the devil. Jesus didn't do that. He considered evil as being something to recognize that it had no power whatsoever. And the only thing that has any power is the opposite. And so that's what he focused on. And as a result, the healing was instantaneous in almost every case. He saw Lazarus not as dead, which is evil. He didn't give it a name to call it devil. He said, Lazarus sleepeth. They said, but he's been in the grave for, you know, whatever, how many days it was. And they said, he's going to smell terrible. They should have been using their senses in a spiritual way of seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste. If you ever want to evaluate any activity, think about the spiritual interpretation that Mary Baker Eddy gives to the five senses. It's in the Blue Book, and it is on page 222, and then there's five more pages following it to 227 that elaborates. But it's very clear. Go to the author page. Everything's by last name, so look for Oakes, Richard Oakes. He quotes Mary Baker Eddy in an unpublished writing where she gives the definition of the five spiritual senses. And that's what we have to think about every time we are using seeing, hearing, feeling, smell, or taste. That will give us a heads up on the spiritual viewpoint of those five senses. So by now you've figured out why I said Mary Baker Eddy was 99% correct about not being the author of Science and Health, because she could not get it published. The very first edition, she worked on it for years. She discovered Christian Science in 1866, and she had a few things out there in terms of writings, but not a single thing that was a book. So it wasn't until 1875, 9 years later, that she thought that she had the ultimate example of what Christian Science was all about. So she found, finally, after being turned down by many, found a publisher that said he would publish the book. She waited, waited, and waited some more. She couldn't figure out why he wasn't doing what he promised to do. Finally, she came to the conclusion that she didn't say anything about evil. So she had to write a chapter called Animal Magnetism. Now, she later renamed it to put the word unmask on it, UNMASKED, unmask, because she had to take off the mask. Because evil deceives and uses decoys and does everything possible so that it's not recognized as being evil. So she had to unmask it, and she had to explain how it's around lurking all the time, and we have to take the mask off so we can see that it really is nothing. And as soon as she figured that out and completed the chapter on animal magnetism, because that didn't come from God, that came from her experience in the prior 9 years. And she said in 1866 that she could write a book on her inspiration, but she didn't feel that she should do it until she proved everything in the book to be true through her own individual experience. So she spent 9 years healing people and testing this and that and whatever to see what she understood about what had been dictated to her by God. She even said that man is God, because she was not realizing that it was by reflection that man is God. And it's not that man is God, it's that man is reflecting God and therefore is reflecting the qualities of God. So after 9 years of all this research and trial and so forth, then she thought she was ready to publish it, but she couldn't get it published until she had written a chapter on animal magnetism. Now, if you think about an animal, they operate basically without intelligence, but on instinct. If they're backed into a corner, they will fight till death. If Bruce Lee was backed into a corner, he would figure out how to get rid of the conflict element of the fight. So it would be one person fighting against themselves. And that's what we need to do with the belief of evil. Let evil destroy itself. Then when it is like totally exhausted, we just push it with a finger and it falls over. But we have to have patience. Patience and more patience. And we have to stay out of the way. We cannot assign a body a thought, speech, or action. We cannot assign a person of any kind whatsoever. They may have robbed and killed and stolen and murdered, done everything possible that would give them the qualification, that guy's the devil. In fact, right now, several different people have been accused of being the Antichrist, including the President of the United States. Because again, what they try to do is they try to put a mask on him and deceive the public. Once she finished the chapter on animal magnetism, and just think about those words, animal. Magnetism, of course, means attraction. Or if it's the same poles, they detract from each other. But, magnetism is mainly being attracted to. An animal means operating on the instinct of an animal. And humans do it all the time. All the time. I've got a ton of things in my closet that are actions based on animal instincts. Any kind of emotion is an animal instinct. We use emotion all the time. We shouldn't. It's not divine. It's not incorporeal. It's not supreme. And it's certainly not infinite. So why are we doing it? Because we let our guard down. Mary Baker Eddy says we should guard our door as if we were guarding it against thieves and murderers. What door is she talking about? Our house door? On a physical house that we open up and walk through? No. She's talking about our door of consciousness. That's the door we have to guard against thieves and murderers. Any thought that tries to steal a thought of truth in our consciousness, anything that tries to dilute it, anything that tries to stop good action that is taking place, a wholesome project. What do you think a genius is? One thing they don't teach in school, of course now they don't teach hardly anything to belief, but one thing they've never specialized in is teaching the students the only thing that's really important to learn, and that is how to think. How to think. It doesn't matter how advanced you are, how many degrees you have, what level they are. I've never known of anyone that learned how to think by taking classes other than someone who is studying Christian Science. It forces you to think. You cannot understand anything in science and health unless you contemplate it and say, wow, That's the opposite of what I've understood to be the truth. There's three quotes at the beginning of the textbook. The first one is by Jesus. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Free of what? Free of anything that's not the truth. And that's with a capital T, which means God. The second quote is by Shakespeare. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Aha. Our thinking determines our life. Our life is determined from our thinking. What kind of thinking are we going to have? What kind of tools are we going to have in our consciousness so that we can do spiritual thinking? Ben Franklin is famous for his T-chart. It's a piece of paper that has a T, a horizontal line at the top, and a vertical line that divides the left from the right. If he wanted to make an important decision, he would do a T-chart. On the left, he would denote all of the advantages if he says, yes, I'm going to do it. On the right, he would have all of the disadvantages if he does it. And then he could see everything there and compare it and decide, well, which one is the overpowering one? If they come up with equals, it's obviously not anything he should do. Or if it's negative. Only if it was a strong positive would he want to embark on it. We have all kinds of tools that they didn't have. We've got computers and cell phones, and particularly computers, which lets you do any kind of comparison you want. You can do your T-chart. You can have several columns on the right side and the left side, categorize it, whatever you want to do. And we have voice. They didn't have a way to record voices back in Mary Baker Eddy's day. We have tools that are just wonderful as a asset to study and learn whatever we want to learn. We have a presentation on our home page right now that says effective healing. And there are three other pages that go with it, which it says heal everything. We tell you step by step how to breathe. If you want results, we know how to get them. We have people in the organization, the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, that had a family that had four people in it, four children, one boy and three girls, and they all went to the same school. It was a 12-year school, and the school rarely had one person that had perfect attendance for the whole year. That was really something to be celebrated. That family had four kids that had 12 years of perfect attendance. They never missed a day, the girls nor the boy. Not a day. 12 years, perfect attendance. The father had his own business. He never missed a day of work. His whole adult life. Never missed a day of work. And the son in the family, the same thing. None of them ever went to any kind of medical individual for their health. They never took any kind of drugs, any kind of vaccines, nothing. Mary Baker Eddy gave us a paragraph on, is there any advantage of following Christian Science in your daily life? It's on our home page. If you read it, you may find that it's attractive for you to consider. But we're not here to work out anyone's salvation, nor should anyone try to be working out anyone else's salvation. It's an individual experience. Frederick L. Rawson was probably one of the most advanced, next to Mary Baker Eddy, And he said, never criticize anyone about their concept of God. He said, we all know so little about it that we're not in a position to criticize someone else. He said, our whole purpose in being on planet Earth was to make other people happy. How about that for a golden rule? He wrote a book. Well, he wrote many books. But the one I'm referring to at the moment is Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. And there's a chapter in it called Applied Treatment. And he lists 1,315 different ailments and how to solve them, heal them through Christian Science. He recommended, his publisher recommended, now that he's gone, and we recommend that you do not read that chapter from beginning to end, but only utilize it to look up a particular ailment that you may be having difficulty with and you want to heal it. Otherwise, you may as well pick up a medical dictionary and learn about every disease there is. Is that what you want in your house? Is that what you want in your house of consciousness? When Mary Baker Eddy says, guard your door of consciousness against thieves and murderers, well, that chapter includes all the thieves and murderers. You only want to solve the problem that you want to work on right now. You don't want to fill your consciousness with 1,314 other ones. I know of a man who was a member of a men's business club, and every kind of profession was represented there. And he said one of them was a dermatologist. He said the worst appearance of the skin was clearly visible on that man when he wore a short sleeve shirt. And it was a moderate climate they were in, so he wore short sleeve shirts most of the time. He said he should have worn a long sleeve shirt, because he was the opposite example of what he would want other people to see. They should see him as a person that knew how to heal a skin disease if they were in the medical line of thought. Well, that's what happens if you read the entire chapter on applied treatment. Why do you think medical doctors, they have one of the shortest lifespan of anyone. Look it up. It's very easy to find with the internet that we have. They didn't have 100 years ago, but we've got it now. Why would a doctor who's supposed to be in the business of healing other people have the shortest lifespan of like almost any profession? All day long, they're educating themselves on disease and sickness. And time after time, they end up being a subject of death. A lot of patients are lost all the time. If you fill your thought with that, you think when you go home, you can just forget about it? Instead of barring your door against thieves and murderers, you say, come on in. I love it so much that I'm going to spend my life being involved in it. We have three people that we have their books available through our website in various forms, MP3s and text, PDFs and whatever. And they had 15-minute appointments. They had such a clear understanding of what the truth was all about that 4 times an hour, they turned out a healing. Somebody came in and 15 minutes later, they go out and they're healed. One person stated that he was able to do that for 35 years before he retired. Wentworth Winslow. Frederick Rawson was so advanced that he determined how to heal back in time. That's the gentleman that wrote the book on the applied treatment. He could go back in time. If somebody had a problem for 20 years, he could go back when they were first aware that they had a problem and heal it at that point, which means that everything else, and I'm putting words in his mouth, but I can imagine going back in time, that's what it means, everything else in his thought would be erased about that particular ailment. A third one is Joel Goldsmith. He was so successful, he had his office across the street from the church in Boston, supposed to be the mother church of Christian Science, that everybody came to him and they stopped going to all the other people. It was an office building just for Christian Science practitioners. It was on the property of the church center. No one else was getting any business. He was getting it all. Because in 15 minutes they were healed. They chased him out of town. They didn't want to cut into the income of their practitioners that were not getting any results. They'd rather have them be there and not get any results and earn an income from suckers than to have the one teach them how to do it that was really successful. Joel Goldsmith had one of his patients call him to a Christian Science nursing home because it was a problem that they wanted to heal. So he went in there, and the receptionist said, "You can't go in there." He said, "Why not?" He said, "Everybody here is sick in the whole building." They had several floors. "Yeah, everybody is under this sickness, and it's contagious. If you go in there, you're going to come back, and you're going to have the same problem." He said, "Well, how many people do you have here?" She told him, "I don't know, several hundred." He said, "You only have one problem. You don't have however many people it was, problems. You only have one." She said, "Well, you can't go in there anyway." He was talking totally over her head. So he went over and sat down in a quiet area in the reception area. And in a few minutes, the nurses started coming out saying, "What happened?" The receptionist said, "What do you mean?" The nurses said, "Everybody's healed. And all at the same time." Joel Goldsmith was so good at what he was understanding about God and what was real and what was unreal that he healed a whole building who had a contagious disease. And they chased him out of town because he was too good. Churches are bureaucracies. Even the Christian Science Church, unfortunately, is a bureaucracy. Mary Baker Eddy didn't want a church. She had one for 2 or 3 years in the 1880s, and she disbanded it. She said, "We don't want a church." Did Jesus have a church? Did he have a bureaucracy? Even Paul didn't. He wasn't really attuned to that, but he was in prison so much of his time, and when he was writing all of those things, and there were people that had congregated in certain areas together. A church is not the solution. It's only a tool for those who are just getting started so they can have some moral support that there's others that are also walking away from things that don't work for healing, and they're studying Christian Science. And that's the same thing a practitioner should be for, to get you started. But if you do nothing more than get healed by a practitioner, that doesn't solve the problem. Because if you don't take up the serious study of Christian Science, you're going to have problems come up everywhere else. To live a life of Christian Science, you have to have your door of thought guarded constantly against the universal beliefs that try to control humanity. So when you think about getting back to Mary Baker Eddy and who's the real author of Science and Health, when you think about that, keep in mind that the relative things in there are not from God. That's her being able to understand what God is about and showing us how to apply it to heal the things that we're faced on an ongoing basis. But remember the family that had perfect attendance. We don't have to miss a day of school, a day of business, a day of being a worker somewhere, a day of being a homemaker. We don't have to miss anything that would be the result of the belief of sin, sickness, disease, or death. If we take up on the serious study, you may want to read on our website the experience about Richard Strain. Very interesting. So, what do we need to learn about? And what is in those definitions of God? That God is the only power. He's the only action. Can there be an accident? If he's the only action, can there be an evil accident? Certainly there can't be a good one. Every accident is evil. And assigning catastrophes to God is ignorance. God is of pure eyes and to behold evil. No, he didn't cause a storm, an earthquake, a fire, nothing. A flood? No, not God. God knows nothing about destruction because God is perfect. We can't know both. We can't know both. It's like going forward one step and coming back one step where we began. Or even worse, going forward one step and going back two. We have to understand what evil is, how it operates, and we have to deal with it in an intelligent, knowing, wise manner. That chapter 5 on animal magnetism unmasked is in there for a very specific reason. And it's the idea of how to overcome evil is laced in all the chapters. There are three levels of consciousness. Look at page 115 and 116. There are three levels of mortal mind and one level of immortal mind. The four levels are explained right there on pages 115 and 116. Four levels of consciousness. If you go to the webpage, the website, mbeinstitute.org, and you click on Divine Metaphysics, it explains the seven synonymous terms, which are like the 10 digits in math. They're the elements. The four operators in math, they're add, subtract, multiply, and divide. In the system of Divine Metaphysics, they are Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. And then the four levels is the third dimension. The lowest level of mathematics is the mathematical tables of add, subtract, multiply, and divide. Whole numbers. Then you get into more advanced things with decimals and fractions and exponents. So there's several levels. Music is the same way. Music is based on mathematics. It has the basics, you know, A through G. It has the flats and the sharps. It has the keys. It has volume, the tempo, timing, all kinds of things. Everything that is worthwhile learning has been structured and systematized. Is the medical profession structured and systematized? The Institute is aware of a situation where a young family had a daughter. The wife was in the hospital, and when the baby was born, there were complications. And the father contacted a practitioner, and he said, "Write down everything they tell you and call me as soon as they do it the second day. So the fellow had 2 days of notes written down, what they told him the first day and what they told him the second day. And he said, "Do you see anything strange about what they told you yesterday compared to today?" And the young fellow said, "Yeah, they're changing their tune. They told me one thing yesterday and they're telling me something different today." He said, "That's right. It's not a structure with a system, with laws and rules like mathematics. That's why people that have a problem will say they want to get a second opinion. Opinion. It's not science. Christian science is science. It doesn't change. The truth doesn't change. There's nothing new under the sun. God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. God can't behold sin, sickness, disease, or death. That's why Jesus was able to resurrect himself. Bicknell Young. In fact, he was a relative of the one that started the Mormon religion. He was out having fun with some other Christian scientists at the beach one day, and he had a problem, and he drowned. He saw them viewing his body when he was unconscious. He'd been declared dead. And the thoughts came to him, "Do I want to go back?" He was considered the dean of practitioners. He was so good. He said, "Do I want to go back or do I want to go forward?" And the thought came to him that he had more things that he could do. So he should go back. And that's what he did. He made the conscious decision to wake up. He raised himself from the dead. The same thing as Jesus. You cannot name a single ailment that has not been healed by Christian Science. Not a single one. I know of a situation where a family had a child born and it was given a label. You would probably recognize it. And it was going to be limited in every direction. It wouldn't be able to reason. It would not be able to have good balance. It would not be able to do good things with their hands, with what they call fine motor development. They went to a practitioner. The practitioner said, "The first thing you do is you teach them how to read." You know, this child was probably 3 years old. "When should we start?" "Right now." They taught the child how to read. They'd come from a family that was involved in music, or the husband did, and so they taught her how to play the piano. They had the funds so they could give her daily lessons. It was like 2 hours long, every day, 7 days a week. In 3 years, that child could play every hymn in the hymn book up to 3 flats and 3 sharps. If you know anything about music, you know what that is. So out of like, whatever, 400 plus hymns, it could play all but probably 25 or 30 of them. And that was about a matter of like 3 years. 3 years of lessons, 2 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that's what was accomplished. They taught it how to swim. Loved acrobatics. Loved ice skating. Ice skating requires balance. Acrobatics requires balance. Bicycle, no problem. Anything with action, it loved it. It would take public transportation to the ice skating rink. When the child was done with skating, would call home, they'd go pick her up. Maybe stop on the way home for ice cream cone or something. The bone structure in the head was supposed to be different. It changed. It changed. The bone structure changed because they didn't accept it as being real. They went to Wednesday evening as well as Sunday church services, and the child would get up and give a testimony, totally extemporaneous. No one ever looked at that child as being anything different, because it wasn't. It was healed of the belief. Does truth have any power to help us? What gives power, the truth, to help anyone? Can it help someone if they don't have any understanding about it, or any belief about it, or any truth about it, or any where they didn't learn anything about it? No. Remember what Shakespeare said, nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And Jesus, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. If we don't know anything about truth, and we don't have our thought open to being healed, we're going to sit there in frustration. Truth cannot help us. We have to bar our thought against thieves and murderers, and we have to open it to the truth. If we don't open our thought to it, we are going to be left out in the cold or heat, you know, whatever the temperature is. Whatever it is, that's where we're going to be. If we want the truth to heal, we have to have our door of thought open, and we have to learn about it. It has no power to help. Evil has no power to hurt. Unless we give it power or ignore it. If we ignore it, then it just grows. If we give it power, then it grows faster. Thought, speech, and action. What are we doing with it? A practitioner once said that life is our schoolyard. Are we analyzing what's going on with our life? Are we learning from our mistakes and correcting them? Or we just get up and after we're knocked down and repeat the same thing, thinking that, you know, things are going to get better? We have to make a definite decision when we make a mistake. What are we going to do about it? We begin our life being neutral. What are we going to be receptive to? The truth or error? The universal belief is lurking out there about Adam and Eve and us being born sinners. Are we going to accept it? What did Einstein think about the textbook? He said, "Blessed art thou," referring to Mary Baker Eddy, "because everything that is in this book." Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures was the book he was referring to. What are we going to do about it? If you look up every word that you do not thoroughly understand what it means, by the time you get done studying science and health, and it should be done on a continuous basis if you want to have continual upgrade in your life, with new dimensions opening up that you never dreamed even existed, your need is going to be met before you even realize you have a need. Read the paragraph on the home page from Mary Baker Eddy, out of Science and Health, regarding practical Christian Science, I think is the title. You'll wonder how you got along without it. You will see immediate results in your thinking if your thought is open. And if you really get serious and contemplate, and especially if you're following the steps that are clearly outlined on effective healing and on how to heal everything. We give you the step-by-step procedure. And if you follow that, you will wonder and wish that you had known about this as soon as you could learn how to read. We cannot ignore anything. We have to classify it. And we've got that beautiful thing that Mary Baker Eddy wrote on page 146. It reads, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. What is disease? Break it into the two words. Dis-ease. It's anything that's a conflict. Anything that is not harmonious is a dis-ease. Sin is a dis-ease. Sickness is a dis-ease. Death, obviously, is a dis-ease. On page 330, she follows up with this. She says there's 32 planks to the platform of the system of divine metaphysics. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. And then from page 330 to 340, she gives you those 32 topics and tells you exactly what you need to learn and understand. She gives it to us on a silver platter. She didn't have it on a silver platter. She had to go through 25 years of misery. In fact, more than that. According to the Christian calendar, she was born in 1820. So it was 46 years until 1866 that she discovered what it was all about. And all of those years were years of misery. She was searching around every corner within geographic range with the limited form of travel that was available to find a solution to her frail health. She hardly attended any school because she was always ill. She educated herself primarily. And she was deemed to have the second largest vocabulary to Noah Webster. That's why I say, if you look up every word you do not understand, you will have a wonderful vocabulary. Life is our schoolyard. What are we going to do about it? We can be constructive in our thought, speech, and action, or destructive. There is no such thing as being neutral, because everything is moving forward. Being neutral means that we're moving forward at a slow pace. We must reject unreal beliefs. We must realize that evil works based on deception. One of our leading politicians, I don't mean that we were in agreement with them, but they were in control of the Congress for many years. They would make up a lie about someone that they did not want to be able to be successful in getting into their political realm. And then they would give the information that they made up, totally fabricated, to the media. And the media doesn't have to claim who they got the information from. So they would say, we got this from a reliable source. And then they would promote the lie. Then the one that created the lie would use the media as their authority to be able to say this is true about this person. And it was a total lie that they had made up themselves. That's how evil operates. That's how evil operates. When the former president, before the correct one, was in office the first term back in 2016, or began in January of 2017, before they took their oath, the prior president promoted and signed a law into force that said the media is authorized to lie to the public. The largest intelligence agency had a project called Project Mockingbird. Look it up. It's on the internet. The director of that three-letter agency, one of the largest in our government, said that we will know that we have accomplished our goal when everything the public knows is a lie and they think it's the truth. That's where our tax dollars are going, to promote that kind of garbage. The whole thing about this woke society, the social sickness that it promotes, reminds me of the quote by Edmund Burke. We have it on our home page. In fact, it's on every page because it's at the bottom of the header, which is the section at the very top of the page, the top of every page. It says, "Evil triumphs when good men do nothing." Evil triumphs. Evil wins when good men do nothing. In other words, the good men know that something needs to be done and they don't do it. That's when evil triumphs. That's when sin, sickness, and death triumphs, if we do nothing about it. Remember what was said in this recording about Bruce Lee. He's aware of it at the very beginning, that evil is there, represented by a person that's trying to fight. He recognizes it. And then he studies, well, I didn't say this, but if you watch any of those videos, and that's why we have so many of them on the website, it is an education, a perfect education about how evil operates. He observes it, how it's conducting itself in this particular situation, in this particular activity. And with Bruce Lee, he would go there and watch that, how he fights with other people. He learns everything he can learn about how they're doing it. And that way we know what we need to do to disappear, so that evil is striking at the air or striking at a mountain instead of at us. We disappear. And once we understand how evil is operating in the present situation of which we want to heal, then we deny that it has any power. We let it exhaust itself with us keeping watch, that we're not giving it any power. And then with just a little touch, we can reverse it, and it builds up that power and destroys itself. It implodes. Not explode, it implodes. It destroys itself. It takes almost no effort at all, if we're doing all of the steps, which is recognizing it, guarding our thought against it, declaring that it has no power over us. But we don't even think about a person. It's the evil that we're talking about here, not an individual. And then when it has totally exhausted itself, we just do the little bit of extra to clean it up, and it's totally destroyed, or is in the process of total destruction. Remember, giving D to evil, which makes it a devil, is not the right way to solve the problem. We are so fortunate. We've been given to us on a silver platter all of the tools. And if you leave one of them out, you're making a big mistake. We tell you, we define what the tools are and how they need to be used. in the two presentations for the two categories that were mentioned, effective healing and how to heal everything. And everything is on the home page, either there or a link there so that you can click on it and go to the complete presentation. We cannot let our guard down for 1 minute. The beauty about Christian Science, among everything else, is that it also enables preventative healing. That was what was mentioned about the family that had 4 children in school, 12 years of perfect attendance. Preventative healing is what the parents were doing and teaching their children. They were exempted from attending any class that had to do with physiology or biology or medicine, drugs, any of that kind of stuff. And no, you don't have to accept the belief that you have to go to a dentist or that you have to go to an optometrist. That's still the medical profession. That's still saying that I'm imperfect. Now, everyone has to work out their own salvation. If they're already wearing glasses, I'm not saying put them down. Because when you have come to the level of understanding of seeing spiritually instead of materially, you will lose the habit of picking them up to use them. You will lose the habit of putting them on as soon as you get out of bed. This will all be smooth. It's not smooth to get there, because you have to give up what you believe to be true your whole life. If you study about how evil operates, which is in chapter 5, and it's also by watching those videos about Bruce Lee, you will realize, in fact, there's one other one that you should study about, and that's Debbie Klingbeil. Just look in the K's. Debbie was a true genius. And her whole family. She said that most people don't realize that the brain automatically rejects anything unlike what it believes to be true because it wants to protect its own ego. And it will do anything, including lie, cheat, steal, whatever it has to do. It goes into survival mode. And a survival mode is totally emotional, like an animal that is cornered. It will fight till death. That's exactly what mortal mind does. It's exactly how evil operates. It will fight to the death. So we've got to be prepared and put on our armor, which is truth. We can't just put it on and forget it. We have to use it all the time. Mary Baker Eddy says one of the most effective ways to defeat evil is to form a perfect model, and everybody does it on their own, whatever they want to put in there that is the truth, so that whenever there's any possible temptation, that we immediately switch our attention to the perfect model. But remember, we cannot ignore the evil. We have to declare that it has no validity. Frederick L. Rawson puts it this way. He says, make a statement. There is no, and then just put in the label that is the name for the evil. And then he immediately switches his thought to focusing on perfect God in perfect heaven with perfect man there, and we're the image and likeness of God. Most people don't realize the importance of Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 and 27. It says, God made man in his image and likeness. And then a little bit further down it says, and everything that God made is very good. From the research the Mary Baker Eddy Institute has done, you're going to have to search far and wide to find a Christian Science church that is abiding by the pure Christian Science, which Mary Baker Eddy discovered and has outlined in the textbook, stated in the textbook. The Christian Science reading rooms include a book by an author that says that everything was fine when Mary Baker Eddy was here, but the world has outgrown the need for it, and it doesn't apply anymore. Are you kidding me? The world right now is in the worst condition it has ever been in since it went into the last dark ages in about 325 AD. And you should read the book on the Council of Nicaea, N-I-C-A-E-A. Look under the author list, which is up at the top area of the main menu, and go to Putnam, Robert C. Putnam. You can't get any better than him on authority as far as a Bible scholar, except for Mary Baker Eddy, and also the other three that were mentioned. Wentworth Winslow and Joel Goldsmith and Frederick L. Rassen. Bliss Knapp, from the age of about 7 or 8 years old, was under the tutelage of Mary Baker Eddy because his father, Ira Knapp, was on the board of lectureship, and Mary Baker Eddy did not want to lose him when the wife passed on. And so she took the boy to be under her tutelage for educational purposes, so the father could continue to travel and be a lecturer. He was like the youngest one that had ever been elected to the president of the Mother Church, one of the youngest ones to be a lecturer. He was led to be involved in some investments that did not require any management. He made them at a very young age, very small amount. And when he passed on, they were worth $350 million. It was probably raw land. And in today's dollars, that would be something like $4 billion. He lived a modest life. He didn't care anything about the money. He was led to make the investments, and he made the investment. So, Mr. Putnam took class from Bliss Knapp, and that's the best you can get. He was the best there was next to Mary Baker Eddy because of his tutelage under Mary Baker Eddy from being a small boy. He wrote the book about the Council of Nicaea, and if you read that book, it's not a very long book, you will understand why everyone is born to human belief, thinking that they're born a sinner. It's all explained in the book of Council of Nicaea. The churches teach what is in Genesis chapter 2 as the history of man. And what does it say starting with about verse 4 or 5 or 6? Of chapter 2 of Genesis. It says there went up a mist. M-I-S-T. Mist. Think of a fog that is so thick you can't see anything. That's exactly what the whole message about Adam and Eve is under. You can't see what's really happening because there went up a mist. And then it tells you about Adam and Eve. Genesis 1 was written after Genesis 2 was written, but it was placed as number 1 with the hand of God involved so that we would learn what the truth is and be prepared to deal with the error. Mary Baker Eddy doesn't have chapter 5 as the first chapter in the book. It's chapter 5. So we have to learn about prayer. We have to learn about atonement. I mean, we have to learn four chapters before we get to understanding what evil is about. If you can't muster up any confidence in what Christian Science is about, read the last 101 pages, pages 600 to 700. There are 486 healings from 85 testifiers. They were after to cure one thing, and they ended up curing five other things that they didn't even realize was a problem. Your whole life will be transformed if you go after learning about God like you go after other things that are based on matter. You have a whole new dimension. You will have a whole new light to follow. You will become a lighthouse where your beacon will be shining for the benefit of others. We state very clearly the first step you have to do is realize that the life you have could be improved. Now, if you think that that's not true, then you're not ready for studying Christian Science and you're wasting your time. But if there's anything in your life you would like to improve, that means your thought is open at least a little bit. The second step is you have to realize that anyone that has been really successful in healing, I'm talking the top people, the ones that could heal instantaneously, like have been mentioned in this recording, they had to have a life of not taking, but giving. Bicknell Young, Bliss Knapp, Frederick L. Rawson, Joel Goldsmith, Wentworth Winslow, Mary Baker Eddy, Christ Jesus, Paul, the Apostle, after he was converted. They all had life of giving. Everyone that did a major discovery, Copernicus, Socrates, Fibonacci, they had to have a life of giving in order to open their thought to bringing forth a discovery of a truth that was not previously known. Newton, he had to have a thought open. When he said, well, there's gravity, that if you drop an apple, it'll go down instead of up. People didn't realize that. Nikola Tesla, another genius. He filed 6,000 patents that have been suppressed for over 100 years. Well, some of them are 125 years, some of them are probably 75, because he continued filing them, but they wouldn't release any of them. They would not release any of them. And where do you think his papers went when he passed on? All of his research. They went to the uncle of the President of the United States, John Trump. Oops, I wasn't supposed to say the words. Yeah, they went to the President's uncle. They were best friends. The President's uncle was the top professor at MIT on all the things that had to do with electricity. So they were best of friends, he and Tesla. The government stole all the papers, and when they started reading them and realized that he was referring to John Trump, they said, well, we got to contact him. So they gave him all the papers, and they said, read these, figure out what this is all about, and let us know. Wisely, he made copies of everything and kept them where they couldn't be found. And when he passed on, what do you think he did with the papers? They went to the President of the United States, Donald. So Donald has all of those patents, all of the research of Tesla, and he's going to release it. But he has to wait until the population wakes up enough. And it could be this year. He's making a big deal about July 4 being 250 years. And he's been releasing the information slowly. They've now made it public that there's been a lot of information on UFOs, upon aliens. The truth. Nikola Tesla knew the truth. He knew how to get free energy out of the earth. He walked down the street holding a light bulb. It was lit from the power coming from the earth. We have all the energy we need that is free. Free. You don't have to mine coal or mine or dam up the water to get the power from a dam. You don't need solar panels. You don't need the wind. You don't even need nuclear energy, probably. Mary Baker Eddy prophesied before she passed that if Christian scientists do not do their work, we would face the most serious decision of our life, because we would be staring the dark ages that was longer than humanity has ever known and more intense. And fortunately, the military got together and realized that Mr. Trump was the man to lead. And so that's what's happening. And the corrupt people that have been running the government for the last 200 years, in fact, probably several thousand years, is coming to an end. And we've got wars not just going on here, but in the galactic. Everything that has been done had a purpose, which is getting rid of the swamp. Venezuela, the fishing boats, Canada, Iran, only the ones that we've been involved in, and Ukraine, only the ones we've been involved in since 2017. The other ones were out of greed and ignorance, the desire to control, and that's been the life of America. The opposite of the Monroe Doctrine. We have been the aggressor everywhere. Most of the draining of the swamp has been done, but it hasn't been made public. Most of the people that we see as politicians and non-politicians that have been running the government are fakes. They're clones, actors, and so forth. The governor of Michigan, the mayor of Chicago, governor of California, the whole Supreme Court in Denver, Colorado, most of the Supreme Court of the U.S., they're all actors, clones, CGI. The real ones have already been detained or executed. And even right now, there's still about another 500,000 sealed indictments. The information is out there. We've published a tremendous amount on the Mary Baker Eddy Institute website. And we show you our sources. Everything is documented. But if we're going to do our job, we're not going to make a big deal out of the problem. We're going to deny it and then focus on the truth. Just as Jesus told us, that is quoted by Mary Baker Eddy in the first introductory quote to the textbook. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And Shakespeare, nothing either good or bad but thinking makes it so. And Mary Baker Eddy, oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. How does God hear our prayer if he is incorporeal? We have to see the spiritual message that Mary Baker Eddy is giving us. She means that she, I believe, this is in my humble opinion, that she means that just like Jesus said, I and my Father are one. He didn't mean he was God. In fact, a Pharisee asked him, said, Dear Master, how can I obtain eternal life? The Pharisee was a tax collector, very wealthy. Jesus replied, Why call thou me good? There is none good but God. And that's exactly how Mary Baker Eddy defines good in the glossary on page 587. She says good is God. Omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. I had previously stated that in the early part of this prayer treatment. If we understand what is in the textbook, it tells us everything we need to know. Now, how to understand it? She wrote 16 other books to tell us how to understand the textbook. And these other fine people that have been mentioned wrote books. Rawson wrote many books. Wentworth Winslow healed a boy from the dead, the belief of death. Joel Goldsmith healed everything that his patients were faced with. We have all the tools. What we don't have is the intestinal fortitude that you need to individually have, demonstrate, utilize, so that you can transform your life from where it is now, whatever level that may be, that's your own personal information, to a better life in every direction. Getting your thought off of matter into spirit, off of the mortal into the immortal, off of false identity, which is soul, to the spiritual identity, off of chaos, which is an absence of principle, into balance and harmony, which is principle, out of death and slowness and lackadaisical attitude, which is all forms of death, and into life, which is eternal. From error, making mistakes, to truth, which is pure. And from hate, where we're criticizing, seeing other people as a mortal, instead of as the perfect idea of God, and not separating the evil from the individual, is a big problem. Dr. Fluno wrote an article on criticism. What he says in that article, Mary Baker Eddy also had an article called The Secret. Just click on her title with her picture at the top of every page, and it will take you to her index. If you click on her face, that takes you to the index of Just Science and Health. And if you go to the index that is linked to her title with her picture at the top of every page, it will take you to her publication index showing all of her publications. And if you go to articles, you will see the article that's entitled The Secret. Every hour of the day, she stopped what she was doing and devoted whatever time she thought was needed to make sure she self-examined her consciousness and make sure she didn't have anything in there that was negative about anyone or any event. What's an example of a negative event? How about war? What's example of having negative about a person? Assigning evil to them. Evil doesn't get assigned to an individual. Someone else has to assign it in their own thought so that they think evil about that person. And who knows? Maybe it's like what was referred to earlier, where the evil that is assigned to a person was totally fabricated by someone that wants to destroy their reputation. We have to give everyone a neutral attitude. Erase everything that's negative about them and start fresh. Realizing what is in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 and 27. That God made them in His image and likeness. The scientific statement of being is filled with power, but we have to release it for us to experience it by opening our thought to the truth and being willing to have our individual ego exposed as being wrong. Because ego blinds. It blinds. It takes away our ability to see. In fact, it takes away all the five senses. It takes away our ability to hear, feel, smell, taste. It takes away our entire spirituality. And it's up to us. We can either say no. There is no, and then name the problem, and then immediately start thinking about God, heaven, and perfect man, and realize that we are an individual manifestation of that perfect man, which is a reflection of God, which is a perfect God, which is all spirit and not matter, which is perfect as spirit is, flawless. Like the Indians said when they saw a beautiful lake, they said, this is the smile of the Great Spirit. It would be reflecting the beautiful landscape around it. This is the smile of the Great Spirit. The Indians knew about spirit. Instead of fighting them and putting them in reservations, we should have joined with them, learned from them, and cultivated our life on their sense of integrity. They were all free people. Everyone in the U.S. could be free if we just learned from the Indians. But no, we didn't do that. If you think Christian Science is outdated because of a book that the Christian Science reading rooms have in there from some Harvard professor, then you're not going to be able to go forward. Don't let any church, including the Christian Science Church, tell you what you should be reading. Most every church out there, no matter what the name is, including Christian Science churches, are corrupt. Are corrupt. The intelligence agencies of the U.S. have infiltrated every church, everyone. We have the definition of church at the top of every page in the website. I shall read it right now. Church, the structure of truth and love. It rests on divine principle. It proves its utility. It elevates the race from material to spiritual. It casts out devils, heals the sick. That's a definition of church by Mary Baker Eddy on page 583 of the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. That is the real church. When she says, are you a member? Think of that church as what you want to be a member of. It is not a bureaucracy. It is not a building. It's not a group of people. It's you independently deciding that you are going to abide by those laws, rules, and guidelines. we do not have any Christian Science churches because of Mary Baker Eddy. Mary Baker Eddy had a church in the late 1800s for 2 or 3 years, and she disbanded it. After a few years, people came to her, pressuring her to have a church. She realized that they had not overgrown or outgrown the need for support from other people that were new to Christian Science. And so therefore, she permitted the First Church of Christ Scientists to exist in Boston, Massachusetts. She designed the building with all kinds of symbols, including 144 lights at the ceiling in the center as a symbol of the 12 by 12 matrix. And there's one man that figured out what that was. He was a friend of the Institute, but he's now gone around the corner where he's not visible. And we have it explained all by his books on the website. I was a personal friend with him. We knew each other for many years, and he gave us full authority to publish anything he had. He had a massive website. He was the most advanced in understanding what Mary Baker Eddy said on page 146 about Christian Science had been reduced to a system. He was far beyond anyone else that has worked on trying to define what she says by the system. And we have it all on the website. He explains the 144. Everything in that church was symbolic. She also built the one in Concord where she was having her home for 16 years, Concord, New Hampshire. And that is also full of symbolism. And then when they wanted to build another church because of the number of people that were overcrowding the first one, she agreed to do it and she guided them on certain things to do, but she did not go to see the church for a long period of time until after it was built. Until she moved back to Boston to begin the Christian Science Monitor. And she did that because the news media were all corrupt. And she said, we have to put the truth out. And for a few years, that's exactly what happened. But then it got corrupted. Humanity does not like purity. Humanity is born with this idea that they're born a sinner. We cannot accept it. We cannot accept human nature as our nature. We have to accept the nature of God as our nature and refuse everything else, deny everything else that has power over us. If everyone would do that, we will have a new transformation of life. And we may very well be embarking on that, not because of Christian Scientists, but because of what the President of the United States is doing with a worldwide alliance of over 100 countries that are all joining together to get rid of the corruption. That's why there's now light at the end of the tunnel. And so much has been done, and we've got it covered on our website. We've got hundreds of articles on the website. We've got the best sources you can find that expose what is really the evil and the progress that has taken place. This prayer treatment will close with one of the most powerful statements that every Christian Scientist probably has memorized. It's called the Scientific Statement of Being. The Institute is aware of some families that have used that and had specific healings by substituting certain words in there. Instead of saying a generic name of no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter, they put in what the name of the problem is. And instead of talking about man, they say, I am an individual manifestation of man. So here is a scientific statement of being by Mary Baker Eddy. And if there's any other thoughts that come, that would be very short, only a minute or two to explain, after I say amen, I will then add that. And when I say the end, it is the end, the finale. Okay, the scientific statement of being by Mary Baker Eddy, and it's stated on page 468 in the recapitulation chapter. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind, and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. Amen. Yes, there are a couple of thoughts I would like to add. One is that we must remember that we cannot let any evil go on harming innocent people. We have to deny that it has any power whatsoever. And we should name the specific evil, not the person, the evil. And we've got to follow what Edmund Burke says. Evil triumphs when good men do nothing. We have to take action. We have to expose the evil. We have to do good things. Mary Baker Eddy says the good we do and embody is the only power obtainable. In the last couple of elections, we have published on our website the way that you can help to get honest people elected and get rid of the ones that are not. We keep you up to date on many things that you should know about so you can include them in your prayer treatments to deny that they can have any power. People think we're involved in Iran because we want to take their resources. We don't need to take any resources that belong to someone else. We want the people that live there to be able to benefit from them. We are an exporter of resources, of energy. Everything we're involved in since 2017 has been for the benefit of draining the swamp. We have worked with Russia, their secret service, and our top Delta Force people, SEALs and so forth, our Navy SEALs, and the other services that have their equivalent to the Navy SEALs. We worked with them to shut down so many pedophilia rings in Ukraine and clone laboratories, human trafficking rings, corrupt U.S. corporations, Venezuela. That was the center of cartels. That's why we had to take it over. Iran. The center of where the corrupt intelligence agencies kept their documents and history and their backups of their hard drives. All buried under the Sea of Hormuz. That's why we had to close down the Sea of Hormuz. is buried underneath there. All the gold and silver that was stolen by the Vatican, we've recovered it. There were 600 plane loads, cargo plane loads, to take it to a safe place under our control. We need to do our daily work like Mary Baker Eddy did. Every hour she set aside a little bit of time, I don't know, probably 2 or 3, 5 minutes, to make sure that we are denying entrance into our consciousness and to clean out what is in there of anything that is not pure. The formula is simple. We have all the facts about what God is, what man is, what the real mind with a capital M is, and so forth. The formula is very simple. We give it all to you on our home page, which is there right now, called Effective Healing. And anything we take off the home page, we save the home page, and it's in the menu under prior home pages and recent home pages, the top two selections in the menu. So it's all there. We don't throw it away. The programmers are kept very busy. It takes about 2,000 lines of code for every single page. And we have over 1,500 pages on our website. So multiply that out. 2,000 times 1,500. It's a very large number of code that we have written. Presently, it is Saturday, May 9, 2026, at 11:51. And the topic of this prayer treatment has been covering all seven of the synonymous terms for God. And the focus is that we must stick with reality, the immortal and perfect, and deny the unreality, and realize that it's an education process for us to gradually expose our own ego to our consciousness, because the ego rejects anything that is unlike itself, and it wants to hang on to being the swamp. And we have to educate it out of itself. That's why it can't be an immediate process. Mary Baker Eddy says she's never met anyone that could not give up their long-holding beliefs, which are wrong, without a struggle. She's never met a single person. And we know she had a struggle from when she was born to, 46 years later. She went through pure HELL with frail sense of health. No education. Now she became one of the most educated people that existed, being declared by others that she had the second greatest vocabulary next to Noah Webster himself, who wrote the 1828 dictionary, which should be our standard resource for vocabulary. Thank you, dear Father, Mother, God, for everyone that has revealed the truth to us. And at the head of the list, of course, is Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy and other experts, Frederick L. Rawson, Wentworth Winslow, Joel Goldsmith. We want to follow in those kind of footsteps, utilizing what they discovered, and make it our own. We can't just repeat words. We have to make it our own. And if you follow what is recommended on the homepage under Effective Healing and How to Heal Everything, you will make steady progress without backsliding. And that's what it takes. Thank you for listening. The end.